You're seeing what kind of good shape I am. If I pressed play and I didn't press record, it's because the cup is not simply not working. They drew lots, and the lots fell on the tribe of Binyamin. And then he brought the tribe of Binyamin according to their families and drew lots. And the family of Matri, Matar, is the one that was taken by Yilochei Shaul ben Kish by Yivakshuhu v'lo nimtza. At one time I thought that it was the Urim v'Tumim, except that I see the Rashi. Rashi seems to say that it was a Goro. You see, because I wonder where the remember the Oron at this time was in Kiryat Yarim, and they are now in Mitzvah. It might very well be that the whoever is the Kohen Gadol at the time may very well be in Mitzvah. But Rashi seems to be learning that it was a Goro. Yeah, but Rashi says, Shol Vayilochik Shol on Pasuk 21, the one we just learned. Avo Bishalo Hoyosham, though he was not there, he wasn't present. Nafal Hagorel Olav, the Gorel fell out on him. Shohu Ktuvin Shimam Beigrot Unetunin Bekufsa. The names were written on pieces of paper and letters, and it was in a box. Vahanovi Machnis Yado Venotel. That's what Rashi says. The Navi would put his hand into the box and he pulled out a name out of the box. He must have started first with 12 ptakim for the 12 tribes, and he pulled out Binyamin. Then they put in the names of all the families of Binyamin, and out came the family of Matri, and from that family they must have put all the names in. Remember, because the Gorol also was considered Min HaShamayim. In other words, the land was divided amongst all of the tribes according to Gorol, and there are a number of other places where we have Gorol even in Torah. Where do we have Gorol? Who? The Sa'il Azazel, that's a Gorol. And also in Parshat Baha'alotcha, when Moshe says he can't carry the people anymore himself, am I like an omein who was supposed to carry the Yonek? Am I going to be able to carry this child, the Jewish people? So God says to him, gather unto yourself 70 of the elders of Israel. So they took 6 from each tribe. How much is 12 times 6?
72.
Good. 72. Somebody said it's working, but I 72. But there was supposed to be 70. The Sanhedrin was supposed to be 70. So what they did, they put 72 ptakim into a box, and each one came over and took a petek. There were 2 ptakim that were that were blank. Those are the ones that Eldad Umeidad took. You know, it means that they had to have a fair way of deciding who, a fair objective way in deciding which tribes would have 6 members of the Sanhedrin and which tribe would have less than 6 members of the Sanhedrin. So that the Gorol was used. And this is, in general, a fascinating study. You know, when Ochon, there was a Gorol used, Ochon in chapter 7 of Yehoshua, when they lost the battle at Ai, and they come back to the camp, Yahushua cries before God. He says, why did we cross the Jordan? What are we doing over here? Why did you take us over here to fall before our enemies? God says to him, Kum, lama ata nofel al panecha, get up, what are you lying there and crying? Let's do something about this. Somebody has taken from the spoil of Jericho. And they throw lots, and it comes out on this fellow Achan. The Gemara says that Achan went over to Yahushua and he said, listen, Yahushua, if the two of us, if our names would be put into a box, it could be any one of us that would be pulled out of the box. What Achan is saying is, the Goral is not necessarily a valid means of arriving at the truth. So Yahushua, according to the Gemara, in the pasuk it says, Sim commonly says, give honor to the God of Israel. And he told Achan, listen Achan, what you're going to be doing now may even be worse than taking from the cherem, because you're casting a great shadow of doubt, casting aspersions on the validity of Goral. The drawing of lots by Klal Yisrael is not just like any other drawing of lots. There is a divine power in the Goral. Huh? Yonah also. That's an excellent example. There it was. The lots came out on Yonah. Every time they drew lots, it came out on Yonah, and they did it a number of times according to the Gemara. So the drawing of lots, in a sense, was a divine act. No, by virtue of the fact that the Torah says to use a goral, so then the goral is going to have that kind of a power. And of all things, when Achan questions Yahushua, but Achan himself knows better than anybody else that the goral was right on. And therefore, when Yahushua tells him, you're going to cast aspersions on the goral, and this is the way the land is going to be divided amongst Klal Yisrael, so he confesses. In other words, most probably, nothing was as great as Achan's last act before he died. The fact that he admitted that the Goral was right, and that it was absolutely correct, that means there is a validity, a divine validity to the Goral. It's not simply a matter of casting lots.
Actually, that's the word you told me, and that didn't
I was going to say, I hadn't seen that Mikro, but I have a feeling that it was the Urim V'Tumim, the presence somewhere of the Urim V'Tumim is that which gave validity to the Goral. I have a feeling that the Kohen Gadol, though it doesn't say it in the Pasuk, the Kohen Gadol was present in Mitzvah, because the Mishkan was there and the Aron was in Kiryat Yanim. The presence of the Urim V'Tumim is that which gives the Goral validity. In what respect did I not mention the Urim V'Tumim? It was not that the letters or the names of the tribes began to shine on the Urim V'Tumim. In that sense, it was not the Urim V'Tumim that did it. But there had to be something divine there in order to give it its validity. Otherwise, really, the Goral is chance. It's mere chance. I mean, couldn't the Goral be mere chance? You know, I think that that's exactly what is so fascinating about that. That's exactly what's fascinating. God is showing him that wherever you go, I can catch you there. I'll get you wherever you go. I would say if it's not the Urim V'Tumim that's there, one better is being done. The Shekhinah is there. But there's always something that has to give the Goral its divinity. Otherwise, Achan was right. We can draw lots amongst anybody, who stole $1 million, and it will come. It's certainly going to fall out on one of us. there had to be something there. So the only respect in which I feel it was not Urim V'Tumim, because Rashi says that clearly, is that it wasn't not the letters of the Urim V'Tumim that's shown in order to tell us Binyamin or Shaul. Let's go. Anyway, they looked for him. V'lom Nimtza, they didn't find him. They don't know where Shaul is. V'yishalu Od Bashem, and they asked again of God, Habo Od Halom Ish, did another man come here? V'yamar Hashem, and God said, Inehu Nechbo El Akelum, behold, he's hiding behind the baggage. V'yorutu, they ran by Yukachum Hashem, they took him from there, V'yitiyatzei B'tocham, and he stood in the midst of the people, V'yigba Mikol Ha'am, Mishichmo V'mala, and he was higher than the entire people from his shoulder and up. V'yom Shmuel Al Kol Ha'am, Shmuel said to the entire people, Hadi'itim HaShebrach Abo Hashem, do you see the one that God has chosen? There's none like him amongst the entire people. And the entire nation cheered. They cried out a cry of joy. And they said, Yechi HaMelech, long live the king. And Shmuel said to the people, Mishpat HaMelucha, the law of the kingdom. Now, I just want you to recall in chapter 8, when they asked Shmuel the first time for a king, so it says in Pasuk 11 in chapter 8, it says, Vayomer, Shmuel said, Ze yihye mishpat hamelech, such shall be the mishpat of the king. He's going to take your fields and your sons and your daughters, he's going to tax you. Quite a bleak picture of what a king will do to you. The Malbim is the one who points out that here, when Shmuel speaks to the people, he does not tell them Mishpat HaMelech. Here it is Mishpat HaMelucha. And there's a difference between Mishpat HaMelech and Mishpat HaMelucha. Mishpat HaMelech means the law that a king may make for himself. Mishpat HaMelucha means the law that applies to a royal house, to kingdom, according to Torah. Mishpat HaMelucha is the law of Melucha as it is expressed in Torah. What he was saying there was that, you know, you may very well end up with a melech who's going to make a mishpat of his own, and that's going to be very bad. So that the Malbim, therefore, is the one who so clearly differentiates between two terms. And he's very right. It's clear. There it's talking about Mishpat HaMelech, and here it is, Mishpat HaMelucha. Vayichtov ba'sefer, he wrote it in a sefer. Vayanach lefnei Hashem, and he placed it before God. Vayishalach Shmuel kol ha'amish lebeitov. Shmuel sent the entire people, each one to his home. The Gam Shol holach lebeitov givatam. Shol also went to his home in Givah. Vayelchu imo achayel asher nogah Elokim belibam. And who followed him? The Chayil, the mighty ones, who God had touched their hearts. The Yid'ei Hashem, the God-fearing ones, who felt that this is God's choice and they're going to follow it. U'b'nei Belial Amru, and there were evil people who said, Ma Yoshienu Zeh, what will this one help us? Here is another example of something that we talked about last week in Parashat HaShavua, in Parashat Balak. So I made the comment that fascinating, in all of Parashat Balak, every time that Balak speaks about the Jewish people, he never once mentions them by name. Bilam, Ole, Matov, Ole, Yaakov, Mishkenotecha Yisrael. Bilam is always able to refer to the Jewish people by name. Balak is incapable. There must be seven or eight psukim in Parshas Balak when he talks about Israel, and he talks about a people went out of Egypt. They have covered the very light of the land. He is now encamped here. I want you to curse my enemies. Never once can he utter the name Yisrael. In a sense, that's of course an indication of the hatred that he has on the. The example that we used was the Zionist entity. Now, there's an entity. It's not the state of Israel. There's an entity. Or, as we pointed out also at the end of the Sedra, when Zimri ben Salu says, Ben Amram, you son of Amram, in his reference to Moshe. Also, an inability to mention him by name. That's most probably the worst kind of, the unkindest cut of all. Now, a person is so unimportant and so insignificant, he doesn't even have a name. There's no Magoshienu Zer. They can't even say Magoshienu Shaul, or they can't even say Magoshienu Ben Kish or Hamelech. Hamelech is certainly not going to call him. It. Magoshienu Zer. What will he do for us? Vayivzu, they shamed him, v'lo hiviu lo mincha, and they didn't bring a gift to him. Vayihi kim macharish. There are two pshatim in macharish. The simple pshat, of course, macharish means remain silent. He hears his shame and his embarrassment, and he remains silent. Now, that could be good, and it could be bad. A king has a responsibility to react and to respond. You can't permit people to just go ahead and shame and embarrass the king. The word macharish can also come from the word thought. Choresh means to think. In Mishle, it appears a number of times. Al tacharosh al re'echo ra'ah. Don't think evil about your brother. Vayhi kemacharish, in other words, he's thinking. He has to find a way in which he will be able to prove himself to the people, and that's going to be what chapter Yud Aleph is going to be all about. Yes? Of course! He does not want to be king. He doesn't feel that he is worthy of it, and therefore this is his anivut, and the anivut is may very well do him in as well. This is something that could very well be a tremendous advantage, something that a man should be respected for, and then there are moments at which one dare not be an honor. This is going to be part of the ambivalence of a show. For a king correctly, and there were those who asked for a king incorrectly. And God was upset. In other words, there were those who wanted a king in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Torah. And then there were those who wanted a king who was going to lead them kechal hagoyim, like all of the nations. That's Bnei Bliyam. That's what the Malbim says. Those are the Bnei Bliyam. In other words, the ones who wanted a king that will be given to them by God to lead them as a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Torah. So here was the Goral. The Goral determined that this is the king, so therefore they accept this as God's choice. It may very well be that the Bnei Bliyal, maybe by virtue of the fact that the man is God's choice, this is already problematic for them. Because they want somebody who is going to serve the needs of the people, not be the one who is, in a sense, going to serve the needs of God and the people. So they haven't been able to yell. Yes?
But you know what wasn't so much with Shmuel when he introduced his Shaul, and he said, and God got angry, Atem Ma'asem, you know, like the whole introduction is with the anger, but he say, well, he was talking, addressing the people who asked properly, but he sort of does it with his backhand fetch.
Incidentally, that's the Malbim brings the Abar Benel, who says precisely that Shmuel is telling them, I'm not doing this because I want to do it, I'm doing it because of your rebelliousness. You want a king. I don't think you need a king now. I don't think that you should have a king now. what you want, so we're giving you a king. You're right. He's not doing it with a feeling of a full heart. He, precisely, exactly. You read the pasuk correctly. Yes.
What I've been concerned about is he didn't excel in any way. Shaul has never exemplified anything to make him. I looked back.
Yeah, but there was a description of him.
Yes, there's.
No. Bachur Batov, chapter 9, pasuk 2.
Okay,
I'm sorry. The Ein Ish mi b'nei Yisrael told me, Manu. Nobody amongst the children of Israel is better than him.
But yet nobody knew it. He had never in any way, he wasn't a captain of the army. He didn't excel in any particular way.
Probably why the nation of the Yahu were unhappy with him. But he was God's choice.
Yeah.
And listen, look, God chose Moshe. You know? God chose Moshe. Moshe was,
you know, if the people had at least had some knowledge of him, who he was, what he was. He had expressed some superiority or something. Apparently his modesty is such even that nobody even knows him beyond his immediate acquaintances. And Hashem.
That's why there's going to be a chapter 11. God is going to give him the... That's why God is going to give him the tremendous opportunity to show Klal Yisrael what he really is, what he's really made of, what his metal is.
But even in English, if they hadn't shown it to us, it doesn't need to be taught.
Now everyone away.
Oh, but it comes from here.
Yeah,
here
yeah.
It yeah. literally means that.
Right.
And the fact is that with regard to Shaul, both are correct. Literally head and shoulders above, and also because he's Bachur Batov, qualitatively also he was greater than them all.
But it never does define in what way he was. I mean, which...
Ein ish v'nei Yisrael tov menu, there was nobody better than him. That's quite a statement. That's quite a statement. That means we're talking about his piety, his Torah. He was a great Talmud Chacham. He was a Yorei Shamayim. Shaul was a great man. That's one of, I said at the very outset that this is one of the things we're going to have to prove as we go through these Prakim, because Shaul is going to...
So the rest of the know that?
No, they're going to...
Immediate?
They're going to find that out now. No, we were told that in advance. The
right.
Pasuk told us. They don't know
they
him.
Don't know it.
They don't know it. So therefore he's going to have to prove himself now. Yes?
But it's more than
and not even if they're not in opposition, there's something about being constantly in the presence and being led by somebody who is a holy man of God. It's restricting, and this is what they were concerned about. They don't want Shmuel. All right, true. So this is the problem. Let's go. Come on. As long as we're learning, let's try and do a parak over here. Vayal Nachash Ha'amoni, Vayichan Al Yavesh Gilad. Nachash Ha'amoni, the king of Bnei Ammon, encamped against Yavesh Gilad. Vayomru Kol Amshe Yavesh Al Nachash, Kirat Lanu Brith V'Navdeka. The people of Yavesh said to Nachash, make a covenant with us and we will serve you. They are ready to submit to Nachash Ha'amoni. Yavesh Gilad is a city on the east bank of the Jordan. Huh? Very good. You learned about it at the end of Shoftim. At the end of Shoftim, when Israel gathers to wage war against Binyamin by Pilegesh Begiva, I think it's in chapter 20 or 21, the next to last or the last chapter in Shoftim. And every city in Israel sent soldiers except for one. Yavesh Gilad didn't send anybody. Pacifists, or they feel that they are, they see themselves as separate from the rest of Klal Yisrael. If anything, I think that they, what did it say of it? And not only that, because nobody came from Yavesh Gilad, therefore they were the only ones who were not present when Israel took an oath not to let their daughters marry the tribe of Binyamin. So therefore, when they decide that the 400 men who are left from Binyamin should have wives, who are they told to take? They're told to take the daughters of Yavesh Gilad. Chapter 21 in Shoftim. They destroy Yavesh Gilad, right? So it's Binyamin. They left some. In other words, there were 400 women who remained, and they were the ones. In other words, we're talking about a city that had not participated together with Klal Yisrael, a city that therefore was, in a sense, out of the pale of Klal Yisrael, a city that Klal Yisrael had gone and destroyed, and then, I imagine, in some way it was rebuilt afterwards. And they're the ones who are now in deep trouble. What's going to be fascinating, of course, is that at this point in time, all of Israel is going to gather in order to come to the aid and the assistance of Yavesh Gilad. There is something very, very beautiful about that. That they are ready to follow Shaul in the defense of Yavesh Gilad. They might very well have thought to themselves, Yavesh Gilad, what are you talking about? This is a city that we should go and protect them. We should fight for them. When they would not join with us, on the contrary, this, to me it seems that this is the king making his presence felt, and that Klal Yisrael rallies around him. Watch, let's read. Vayomer aleihem Nochash Amoni, and Nochash Amoni said to them, Bezos dechrot lechem, with this I will make a covenant with you, b'nekor lechem kol ein yamin, if you will take out, each one of you, take out your right eye. The Samtir Acherp, I'll call you Yisrael, and I'm going to make this as a source of shame for all of Israel. In other words, the one-eyed men of Yavesh Gilad. Ayom Re'ilov Zikna Yavesh, the elders of Yavesh said to him, Hedeflon Mishivat Yomim, leave us for 7 days. V'nishlecha Malachim, we're going to send messengers, Bechol Gvul Yisrael, amongst the entire tribes of Israel, the entire boundaries of Israel with him, Ein Moshia Otanu, if there's nobody to save us, we are Tzonu Elecha, we will go out toward you. Why do they say, if there's nobody to save us? Because the chances are that nobody would come to the aid of Yavesh Gilad. Vayavor HaMalachim Givat Shaul, the Malachim came to Givat Shaul, Vayedavru Advorim B'yaznei Ha'am, Vayisu Kol Ha'am Et Kolam, Vayivku, they let lifted their voices and they cried, Vinei Shol Po Achareha Pakorman Afadeh, and Shol came after the cattle from the field. Really it means that he was out in the field with his cattle, and the time after the cattle returned back to the barns and to the corrals, he followed them. Vayama Shol, Malo Om Ki Yivku, why is the nation crying? Vayisafru Lo Et Divrei Anshi Yavesh, and they told him the words of the people of Yavesh. Batitzlach Ruach Elokim Al Shol, and the Spirit of God came down upon Shol. B'shamo Kisham'o Et HaTvorim HaElo, when he heard these things, Vayichar Acho Miyod, and he became very angry. Vayikach Tzemet Bokor Vayinatcheihu Vayishalach B'chol Gvul Yisrael B'yad HaMalachim Leimor. He took a pair of cattle and he cut them up and he sent it throughout the entire boundaries of Israel through messengers saying, Asher Enenu Yotze Acharei Shaul V'Achar Shmuel, whoever does not go out after Shaul and after Shmuel, Ko Ye'osel Levekoro, so shall be done to his cattle. Vayipol Pachad Hashem Alam, and the fear of God fell upon the nation, Vayetzu Ke'ish Echad, and they went out as one man. Ah, very good. Very good. All of this is bringing us back to the story of Pilegesh Begiva. Pilegesh Begiva. There, the husband of the Pilegesh is the one who had cut her up into 12 pieces and sent it throughout all of Israel. In a sense, what's happening now is all of the wrongs of the end of Sefer Shoftim are being made right now. Everything is now going to be in a positive manner. And of course, what's more fascinating about this than anything else? Same city and more than that. Then the Pilegesh had been cut up in order to bring all of Israel against Binyamin. And now Binyamin is gathering all of Israel to go out and save the people of Yavesh Gilad. There's a certain, like, everything is being turned around. Everything is being made right. Yes? Anything. Today we're a nice small group over here, an intimate group. Anything is permitted.
You know, the creativity of Bishamo and Kishamo.
I thought you would ask that. Huh? Yes.
The Amram and Ke Amram.
The Amram and Ke Amram. And we're going to have in Pasuk in Pasuk 9 in this parak again, we're going to have Bichom and Kechom. And let's say that I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what the difference between Bet and Chaf is, and why one is Kri and one is Ktiv. And while I've made quite a study of Kris and Ktivs around Tanakh, I haven't come up with anything great. I mean, I hear the connection that you're making, very nice, but I, so in the pasuk over here, what did it say over here? Where was that pasuk again? I can't. Vav, Vatitzvach Ruach Elokim al Shaul Bishamo, it's written Bishamo, and we read it Kishamo. And I don't know the difference. And there has to be some kind of meaning. Otherwise, why have a separate kri and a separate ktiv? I don't know. So this is one of those things that we'll just have to think about. Vayifkidein bevozek, vayiu bnei Yisrael shlosh meot elef, v'ish Yehuda shloshim alef. He counted them bevozek. And the Bnei Yisrael were 300,000 men, and Ish Yehuda, the people of Yehuda, were 30,000. The Vayifkedein Bevazek is very important. I'll only tell you what Chazal say about it. Bevazek, one pshat is that was the name of the place. He counted them in a place called Bazek. There are two other pshatim in Bazek. One means shards of earthenware, and the other means stones. And here is where the Gemara tells us that there is a prohibition, limnot et Yisrael. There's a prohibition, you're not allowed to count Jews. So how did Shaul count them? Each one of them took a shard of earthenware, broken piece, and they put them into a box, and then they counted the shards, or bezek meaning a stone, and this is what they counted, because also limnot et Yisrael, you're not permitted to count Israel. Yes.
I could never understand the objection, because they don't go around counting heads. They bring you a form and you write everything down. Now, if you're allowed to count the stones, why aren't you allowed to count the paper?
Incidentally, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. There are so many responses that have been written about census and how the census is done in Eretz Yisrael, that it clearly is mutter 100%. And this is by Yifkatei Bevozek, and the Gemara over here is precisely one of the sources. In other words, nobody's walking around and counting Jews on street 1, 2, 3. Forms are filled out and then the forms are counted. What's the difference between a form piece of paper or a shtickel broken piece of earthenware or anything else? Yeah. But you have no idea how much has been written about the census. And every 10 years or so when the census comes up, there's always going to be somebody else who's going to come out with another issa. And then we have to go back to all of the tshuvas that said that it was absolute. Everybody dealt with it. I mean, a census is basic. A country needs a census. How do you know how many schools to build, how many hospitals to have? I mean, we're talking about all of the social and health services of the country depend on knowing how many people you have, in addition to the security of the country. And we're not counting Jews. I mean, what do they want? They want somebody to walk around saying, Shia Samecho, Baruch Hashem, Lazdech. They want them. You had it to be done. So you're right. Counting the forms is no problem at all. Yes? I knew somebody was going to ask that.
I didn't hear that question.
Is this where Bezek got its name? Well, yeah, but Bezek comes from lightning. It's a pasuk like electricity, like in Yecheskel, the word bezek is used, something that shoots out of the sky, something like a lightning or a... That's right, okay, no, that's also a way. Alright, let's go. Vayamru l'malachim abayim, and they said to the messengers who came, Kot tonun li'ish yavish gilad, so you should say to the people of Yavish Gilad, Machar, tiyalachem tshua kechom bichom kechom Hashemesh. Tomorrow, your salvation will come as the sun becomes, as the sun grows warm. The sun growing warm, there are different pshatim, does it mean 3 hours of the day, 4 hours of the day? One pshat says, when a man doesn't have a shadow, which means noon. Now here, you know, I understand this a little better. What would be the difference between Bechom and Kechom? Here I have a feeling
Bechom,
leave the chua out.
Kechom is very.
Or?
No, it was Abhav, it was Kechom Hayah, which is the hottest part of the day.
You're bringing the pasuk from Bayera, right? Okay. What suddenly occurred to me now is, where else do we have B and K? No. No. In Parashat Bo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, Bachatzot, at midnight I'm going to come down and destroy all of the firstborn of Egypt. When Moshe says it to Paro, he says, Kachatzos. Kachatzos, Ka, is not as precise as the. Bachatzos means precisely. God can say precisely. Moshe doesn't want to say precisely in case Paro's watch is off by a few seconds. He shouldn't be able to say that, God wasn't able to do it precisely. So that means from there we see that B is precise and K is approximately. So in the Bichom, I hear. Here I can explain it. I think I can explain it here. The Cree is what they're supposed to hear. The people of Yavesh Gilad are supposed to hear sometime around the heat of the day, your salvation is going to come. But you know what? We are told by looking into the text that the Rebbeinu Shlomo is going to bring that Shua precisely at Chom HaShemesh. It means in the Krieg, the way you read it is what they hear and what they're told. They're being told something that is not as precise. But the Pasuk is telling us absolute precision. It's going to be bidiyuk. At whatever time Chom HaShemesh is, if Chom HaShemesh is noon, high noon, precisely at high noon, Greenwich time, the Tshua is going to come to... very good. Now, now I'm beginning to see the pshat in the pasuk. I'm enjoying this relaxed kind of. In pasuk 6, it said, "Vatitzlach ruach elokim al shol bishamo et hadvarim ha'ele." In matter of fact, the moment that he heard these words was the precise second at which the Spirit of God came down upon him. Precise. The observer might not have been able to see that. As far as the observer is concerned, you know, sort of around the time that he heard this, it seems that some kind of spirit descends upon Shaul. But by reading the text, we're told, you should know, it was all pre-planned by God. The moment that Shaul hears these words, that's it. The Spirit of God descends upon him instantly, immediately, with absolute precision. Maybe. I don't know yet. I don't know yet now what I'm going to do with Megillat Esther. Ki Amram Elav, as they told him, Yom V'Yom, or Bi Amram Elav. Listen, at least we started with a... with Saha? Yeah, no, no. There are going to be many others. but that's clear that there always has to be meaning to the Kri and the Ktiv. Always, this is a cloud. Otherwise, we're talking about a textual differences that are, got to be meaningless. It must have some meaning. Huh? I would imagine so. So, but the example that I'm using is the Bechatzos and Kechatzos in Parshat Bo. And it's pretty... Now, when I think of that, it occurs to me that the B is always precise, and the K is sort of like. Isn't that what you were saying? The K can either be like, or comparison, similar to, but not necessarily... That's right. Come on, like.
Need to deal with time, but I'm not
deal with time. Doesn't deal with time, right? So I don't know what I'll do. Listen, but we'll think about it. We'll come up with something. Let's go. If Vayavo Hamalachim and the messengers came by Yagidu Lanche Yavesh, and they told the people of Yavesh Vayismachu, and they were happy. Vayamar Anche Yavesh, the people of Yavesh said Machar Neitze Aleichem. They tell Nocha Sharmoni, tomorrow we're going to go out to you. And you can do to us whatever is good in your eyes. Came to pass the next day. Shaul placed the nation in three groups. And he came within into the camp of the people of Ammon at the early morning. And they smote Ammon until Chom Hayom. Is there a certain precision in Ad Chom Hayom? Vayi anishorim, those who remained by Yofutsu when they were dispersed, v'loy nisharu bam shnayim yachad, and no two remained together. Here, what is it that, you know, if they would have learned Tanakh, if the people of Ammon would have learned Tanakh, they should have been ready for a surprise attack. I mean, this is really what Shaul is doing over here. This is a surprise attack. Yehoshua pulled a surprise. Gideon pulled a surprise attack. There may have been others, but this is an attack in the middle of the night toward dawn. By Yomer Hamas Shmuel, Mi Haomer Shol Yimloch Aleinu, Tnu Ha'anashim U'Nemitein. The people said to Shmuel, who are the ones who said death? Because now it means that those who complain or who are unhappy with Shaul being king are Moreh B'Malchus, they are rebelling against the king. Hayom Shaul, lo yumat ish payom azeh, nobody shall be killed today. Ki hayom osa Hashem tshuva b'Yisrael, because today God has done great salvation over Israel. In a sense, there's an amnesty because of the specialness of the day. Hayom Shmuel olam l'chu v'neelcha ha-Gilgal, u'nechadei shalom l'chah. Shmuel said to the people, let's go to Gilgal, and there we will renew the kingdom. Now there's going to be a new pledge of allegiance to Shaul, because now the people have indeed accepted him. The entire people went to Gilgal, and there they crowned Shaul as a king before God. Shaul and all the people of Israel were happy. Ad Ma'od. Very, very happy. So here it is, the end of the perek before. There are those who doubt whether he is the one who is worthy of being king. He has found, God has given him the opportunity to prove himself. And the fact is that he did have to prove himself. Let's go, let's learn further. Yeah. Yeah, because once he had been appointed king, to shame or embarrass him is murder, the malchut, and a king has a right, therefore, to put people to death if they are murdered, the malchut.
That's why
it's
later on.
not only that, Shaul in fact kills people whom he suspects of being murdered, the malchut. That's what's going to happen. There's going to be such a dramatic change in the whole personality of Shaul. The same person who begins as a Nechba El Hakelim, the one who is full of humility and modesty and tzniut, is going to turn into a completely different kind of person. That's going to be the difficulty with the personality of Shaul. Yes? We're coming now with the Haftar of Korah. From which pasuk does it start? Yes, that's right. No, Yud Aleph?
Yud
Dalet. Right, Yud Dalet. I thought very nice. There, in other words, unless of course you will say that there were two different kinds of rebellions, but that's interesting. Okay, you see, that's something when you read the Haftorah, we lose sight of the fact that this was a response to a rebellion. That's, you have no idea how nice what you just now said is. We lose track of it. Now these psukim already are the beginning of Haftorah for Korach. You know, I always look for connections between the Haftorah and the Kriyat HaTorah, and this one I didn't think of. Because the beginning, these psukim are the response to rebellion. There the rebellion ended with the destruction of Korach, the Cholat Ato. And it may also very well be that what's being pointed out is that there's a difference between between rebellion against Moshe and rebellion against the king. Rebellion against Moshe is a rebellion against the validity of Torah. Rebellion against the king, a king can still say, okay, today there will not be punishment, but in the future it will be. All right. I love this Haftorah. There's something very moving about this Haftorah. Also, of course, who is the one that speaks in this Haftorah? It starts with Vayomer Shmuel, and it's going to say Vayomer Shmuel again. Shmuel was a descendant of who? Shmuel was a descendant of Korach. Rashi brings in Parshat Korach, why did Korach see fit to rebel against Moshe? Because he saw Beruach HaKodesh, that a offspring is going to come from him that will be equal to Moshe and Aaron. Moshe v'Aaron b'Chohanov, u'Shmuel b'Korei Shemo. So he thought, if that's the kind of child that's going to come from him, then he has the right to stand up, if he feels so, he has the right to stand up against Moshe. But of course, it saved his children, but it didn't save him. His rebellion was a rebellion, and here it is Shmuel, now who speaks to all of Israel, and this is a moving speech. Vayomer Shmuel kol Yisrael. Shmuel said to all of Israel, "Hinei shamati b'kolchem, behold, I've heard, listened to your voice, l'chol asher amartem, everything that you said to me, v'amlich alechem melech, and I made a king over you. V'yatva now, hinei hamelech mitalef ufnechem, the king is going before you, v'ani zakanti v'safti. I've become old, seva is even more than old." What English word would we use for, ripe old age? Though he is, of course, his age at the time, according to the Gemara, is 50. According to the Gemara, Shmuel died at age 52. And Misas Shmuel, the Gemara says, the death of Shmuel is somebody who dies at age 52. What was it? Why his aging was an accelerated divine process, the Gemara says. Zikna, because what? No, not because of that. It's because the torch has to be passed to Shaul and then to David. God wanted that Shmuel should look old as though he had lived a full life, but the time had come for Malchut Shaul and Malchut David, and he has to pass the torch on. This is the Gemara's approach. We will, Yitzhak Hashem, talk about other approaches to understand it. I'll just tell you now that the Malbim, Abarbanel here is a maverick, and incidentally the Abarbanel quite often is a maverick in the sense that he does not necessarily believe that Shuto Shel Mikra has to be understood the way the Gemara did. He's going to quite an elaborate proof, but a very strong one, that Shmuel was in his 80s by the time he died, and Ani Zakanti Vosafti may represent the way he looked, but not his age. But that's not for now. That's a very good question. Very good question. It also has to do with the fact that Shmuel is going to be completely broken up because of the fall of Shaul. A lot of things that are going to happen that are going to give him kitzur yomim, according to the Gemara. But according to the Gemara, it is a divine. Zakanti v'safti ka zikno kofza olav. Those are the words, and Rashi brings it that he became old looking before his time.
Do you want? Is there a difference between, it says, Vayomer Shmuel al Ha'am, and then Vayomer Shmuel al Kol Yisrael? Are they different?
Well, let's see. What do you think? Obviously, you're correct. They're different. Shmuel, the first possibility of Shmuel said, "I'll call Yisrael." Hine shemati b'kolchem. I know what the pshat is. We've said a number of times that when Israel asked for a king, there were those who asked correctly and those who asked improperly. There were those who wanted a king to fulfill the mitzvah of Torah, and there were those who wanted a king who would lead them kechol hakoyim. When he talks El Kol Yisrael, it means that he's now speaking to both of those groups together. Those who asked properly and those who asked improperly, in order to let them know that whatever it is that you wanted from me, I have done it according to God. Ha'am means the people who had asked improperly.
Like they use the term Ha'am for the Arab brothers.
That's right. Ha'am and Yisrael, Am means the masses of people who asked incorrectly. Yisrael alone represents Zikne Yisrael, who asked the Melech in order to fulfill the mitzvah. When he speaks to Kol Yisrael, this represents everybody together. If it would have said Yisrael alone, would not be so. Kol Yisrael. And in a sense, what it means is, now that there is a king over them, and they have all accepted the king, then they now become one unit called Yisrael. The king is going before you. My children are there with you. When he says, it means that if you want to ask a shayl of somebody, you have my children that you can ask. And I'm the one who went before you. I led you from my childhood until today. Hinini, here I am, a newbie. Testify against me if you wish. Neged Hashem v'neged Mishicho, in the presence of God and in the presence of His Anointed One. Et shor mi lakachti. Whose donkey, whose ox did I take? V'chamor mi lakachti. Whose donkey did I take? That mi ashakti. From whom did I steal? Et mi ratzoti. Who did I oppress? U'miyad mi lakachti kofer. From whom did I ever take ransom? V'alim einaybo, so that I should look away and not paskin din against him. Tell me if there is anything of the sort. V'ashir lachem, and I will answer you. In Korach, that's what Moshe says. Et chamor mi lakachti. Did I ever take anything? And when it says et shor mi lakachti, so Rashi over here points out, as Rashi does over there. By Moshe, when Moshe says, whose donkey did I take? So he says that when I went from Midian to Mitzrayim in order to save the Jewish people, I had a right to take one of their donkeys, or they should have paid me for my travel expenses. I'm traveling there in order to save them. Salam agi ali, my travel expenses. You know, and Eshel, what do you call it? What are they... What are the shlichim over here? You have your per diem. I mean, there are expenses. And Moshe said, I never took anything from the cloud. So here also, Shmuel says that shor mi lakachti. Rashi says, la'avodati. Whose ox did I take for my own work? V'chamor mi lakachti. Whose donkey did I take? Kishahayiti holech me'ir le'ir. When I went from city to city, lishpototam, to judge them, al iskate zorcheim, about their own needs. Hayiti holech al chamor shuli. I went on my own donkey. V'hoyoli li tol mishalhem. I should have taken it from them. I mean, my travel expenses from city to city in order to serve as a judge for the Jewish people. This is precisely the same thing that Rashi says by Moshe. Very nice. What I'm not sure that I fully... No, I do. All right. Why did Moshe feel the need to say that during the Korach rebellion?
Because he was an interested party. they said you took everything.
When they say you're going to rule over us too, so in a sense he wants to point out, I never wanted anything from Klal Yisrael, I never took anything from Klal Yisrael, whatever I did was completely selfless. How can you accuse a person who is completely selfless of wanting to rule over them? And this, why does Shmuel? I mean, I can understand it a bit better with Moshe. Why Shmuel saying it? It's going to sound like his, incidentally, this is his last speech to Claudius, so it's going to sound like his closing speech. In a sense, because he's moving into the background now. There's a king. Even though with the king, he is going to be involved with the king. Yes?
I just find it when to, after a big shock, they just anoint the child again. Why did this speech come here? I would think this should have appeared.
All
of a sudden
he got so old. No, but I mean, what he's saying here should, in other words, I didn't take it as this for you, yet you asked for a king, what do I do? I just find it a bit misplaced. I don't understand why he's here. I think that here is precisely the place where it should be. Because at this point, nobody can accuse him anymore of wanting to hold on to the reins of leadership. He has already relinquished it completely. It's only now that it's going to fall on receptive ears. If he would have said it earlier, they would have seen it as an attempt on his part that, no, you don't need a king, but they want a king. So what do you want to do? You want to prove to us that you're a good fellow? They were not ready to listen to that. Now he can say it to them. Because I've done everything that you wanted me to do.
But that question is that he's saying it now because God chose somebody else. So he's afraid.
Does he bring a source for it?
No.
I didn't look into it. Let me see if he brings the source. I just like the maps. The maps are great. Yavesh Gilad is about 15 kilometers south of Bet Shan, on the other side of the Yarding. What chapter? Oh, we're in chapter of Bez. Huh? Kuf Dalad, yes. Uvanai hinam itchem. It doesn't say where that comes from. All right, it could be good. No, there's an excellent parish. In other words, that his removal, so to speak, should not be seen as a condemnation of him. All right, we'll take another few psukim, and we'll rest up till next week. Bayomru, they said, Lo ashaktanu v'lo ratzotanu, you didn't steal from us, you didn't depress us, v'lo lo kachtum yad ish mu'man, you didn't take anything from anyone. Bayomru aleim, and he said to them, Eid Hashem dechem l'tgalpi, bear testimony, v'eid mishitcho hayom hazeh, and let his anointed one be a witness today. Kilometzotem biyadi muhuma, that you found nothing in my hand that belongs to you. Vayomer, and he said, Aid. Rashi, who is the he? Says Rashi, Batkol came out from heaven and said, a voice came out from his heaven and said, heaven bears testimony. All right, starting from Pasuk Vav is Shmuel's last speech. We'll leave that for next week.